You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. We've all had this experience in some form or another. You're in a conversation or a lecture, and suddenly you realize your brain has wandered a million miles away. We tend to have a pretty negative view of mind wandering. We think of it as a failure of attention or control. But what if letting our minds wander could actually help us learn and make us more creative? Jonathan Schooler is a professor of psychology and brain sciences at UC Santa Barbara, and he studies mind wandering. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Mind wandering, as I was just noting, is often defined by what it lacks, lacking discipline, lacking focus, which kind of leads me to wonder, is it the default? Is it what happens when we don't try to do anything else with our brains?
Yes. The bottom line is that your mind is always doing something. It's always somewhere. And when you're not actively engaging it in something, it will find its own activities, typically thinking about current concerns or other sort of pressing issues. The mind just naturally goes there. And there's even a network of brain areas that are distinctly activated when people are mind wandering, called the default mode network. And it's been found that when people are not given a task to do, this series of different areas in the brain tends to be especially active.
So we can actually define mind wandering down to the nerves or the parts of the brain that are actually involved. It's that distinct a process.
Well, the default mode network is activated across a whole variety of different situations. So it turns out to be somewhat complicated to say, just based on brain activity, whether or not someone is mind wandering. The best way to know whether or not someone is mind wandering is to ask them. If someone's reading along and you probe them and you go, just now, were you paying attention to what you were reading? People are pretty good at reporting whether or not their minds were on task, that is, they were mindfully reading, or that their mind had gone somewhere else. And when we look to see differences in their performance, we see dramatic effects when they're mind wandering. When they're mind wandering, not surprisingly, their reading comprehension is impaired, but all sorts of other things are changed too. Their eye movements, as their eyes move across the page, are different. They're much more stereotypical in the sense that they're not sensitive to the properties of the words. Pupil dilation changes, brain activity changes, a whole variety of things change. But it's hard to just pinpoint, based on those activities, whether or not people are mind wandering. The best way is to simply ask them.
We hear a lot these days about mindfulness, the need to be present. How does that focus on mindfulness relate to mind wandering?
That's a great question, and that's something that my lab has been very actively involved in. Let me start by saying that there is great value in mindfulness. Learning how to pay attention and be focused on the present is one of the greatest skills that people can develop, and particularly the ability to let go of nagging thoughts. So I'm very enthusiastic about mindfulness, and I think it's really important that people learn that they can stay in control of their attention and focus when they want to. That said, mind wandering is somewhat the opposite of mindfulness, in the sense that when you're mind wandering, you're not in the present. Your mind is off on some, you know, tour of who knows what particular thoughts and fantasies. So there are many times when mind wandering is really not appropriate. If you are a surgeon, you really don't want to be mind wandering while you're, you know, making that incision.
Your patient certainly doesn't want you to be mind wandering.
But that's right, exactly. But if you are doing chores or gardening or taking a walk, there are all sorts of situations where mind wandering could be quite productive. We're always trying to fill every moment of our time with cell phones and not giving our minds the opportunity to just wander off. And that may interfere with the opportunity to have these moments of productive mind wandering.
Well, Jonathan Schooler, as you're just alluding to, your research has shown that there are benefits to mind wandering. In particular, it seems that after taking in some new information, maybe kind of pausing and letting your mind wander can really help with learning. Do we understand how that works?
Well, we're still understanding the positive role that mind wandering can play in everyday life, but there do seem to be a number of different contexts in which it can be helpful. One is when you're stumped on a problem. A good example would be if you had a tip of the tongue experience and you just can't think of a particular word, if you keep struggling to come up with that word, it'll evade you. But if you pause and just move on, do something else, your mind will wander and then pop, the word comes to mind. And we find that this isn't just the case for long-lost words. It can be the case for solutions that creative individuals are searching for. So we studied creative writers and creative physicists and asked them every day to report when they had their ideas. And we found that about 20% of their ideas happened when they were neither at work nor were they actively pursuing the problem at the time. For example, in the shower, or gardening, or driving their car. And when they had ideas in this situation, they were as creative as the ones that they had at their desk, but they were more likely to involve an aha experience where they seemed to sort of pop out of the blue, and critically, more likely to involve overcoming an impasse of some sort. So some challenge in the creative process that they'd been run up against was somehow more easily overcome or came to mind when they were mind-wandering. So it seems that mind-wandering may be particularly helpful for allowing us to overcome impasses.
It's easy enough, though, to say to somebody who is struggling with a challenge, okay, don't obsess about it. Just give yourself some downtime and maybe an answer will just come to you. But it's not necessarily easy to put into practice to say, okay, I'm facing a challenge. I think I'll do nothing. Are there ways to, I don't know, formalize or kind of mind wander deliberately? Are there ways that you can promote this mental process that might lead to creativity and unexpected solutions?
Well, that's a great question, and that's one that we're actively pursuing right now. And if listeners have suggestions about strategies or techniques that they've used to make that happen, we'd love to hear them because this really is an exciting and open area. We have a number of speculations about the kinds of things that we think may be important. One thing is that all mind wandering is not the same. We find that creative individuals are particularly likely to mind wander about topics that they find interesting, about problems in which they're curious about solutions, about strange or unusual imagery, about meaningful ideas. And collectively, I like to think of this kind of curious mind wandering as mind wondering. And I think that that particular kind of mind wandering, cultivating thinking about topics that you find curious and interesting and stimulating, may be the kind of mind wandering that creative individuals do, that we know, and may actually be causally useful in promoting creative ideas.
I mean, it's almost like a guided or focused kind of mind wandering, not completely wandering free, but within a certain realm, a certain topic area.
Well, it's more sort of priming yourself to just let your mind freely explore areas that it's curious about. There's also research which has found that in general, when people are mind wandering, they're less happy than when they're actively attending to the task. But if people are mind wandering about something that they're especially interested in, they're more happy. So if you can be mind wandering about things that you're curious about, that seems to be a particularly sort of positive kind of mind wandering. And the idea is to sort of cultivate a perspective where your mind naturally lands on topics that you find interesting. Now, the other thing that may be very important is to have sort of a light touch where you let your mind jump from topic to topic and not just be stuck on one particular thing. So if you're actually just thinking about how am I going to solve this problem, how am I going to solve this problem, then you're really not mind wandering. That's now your task. You're now trying to solve this problem. But if you're just allowing your mind to lightly touch on one topic and then bounce to another topic, that sort of changing of perspectives, changings of topics, lightness of touch of the thinking may help to promote creative insights.
Jonathan Schooler, as a brain scientist, I wonder, how did you originally get interested in mind wandering?
I've been a mind wanderer my whole life.
When I was going to ask if you were a daydreamer.
Oh, yeah. When I was in first grade, I got a report card from Mrs. Shork, which I just recently dug up, and it said something to the effect of, when I think of Jonathan, I imagine him at the end of the line, 5 feet behind everybody else, shoes untied, totally preoccupied, and completely content.
It doesn't sound like a ringing endorsement on a report card, but apparently, in your case, a recipe for success.
Yeah, I think she struggled with my mind wandering to some degree. I actually reached out to her just a year ago, and she remembered me and was delighted to hear. And apparently, I won her over when she caught me crying at the end of Charlotte's Web. She decided that whatever my peculiarities were, she was happy to live with them. But yeah, I think many people struggle or are told that they're, you know, their heads are in the clouds and that this is a problem. And of course it can be, but there also is this other side that their minds can be going in creative directions. And so the challenge is to, at the same time, help people to learn how to focus. And, you know, you can be terribly creative, but if you can't, you know, put that creativity to work for you, it's not going to do you much good. So you need to learn to focus, but at the same time, still keeping that childlike wonder, still allowing your mind to go in interesting places and discover new things.
Besides the practical benefits of creativity, problem solving, learning, you've also said that you think that understanding mind wandering might help us understand consciousness itself. How so?
Yeah, well, mind wandering, of course, is all about the stream of consciousness. And so when we start to study mind wandering, we're really looking at how consciousness flows through time. And consciousness was a bad word in psychology, surprisingly, for a long time. It was all about behavior. And then even once we started thinking about cognition, people were very reluctant to say anything about consciousness. But consciousness ultimately is the thing of which each one of us is most intimately familiar with. And by refining the techniques for studying mind wandering and learning that you can ask people about the contents of their thoughts and get reports that correspond in meaningful ways to all the other indirect indices, we can begin to understand how consciousness evolves, how the thinking and thoughts of consciousness evolve over time, and more generally, appreciating the great value in understanding consciousness. Personally, I think consciousness is one of the greatest, most remarkable puzzles left to science, understanding how this 3-pound meatloaf is capable of producing experience is just remarkable.
Jonathan Schooler is a professor of psychology and brain sciences at UC Santa Barbara, where he studies mind wandering. Jonathan, thanks so much.
My pleasure.